Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, April 28th, friends, welcome to the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
So in just a few days, wedding season is going to kick off.
That's official.
Yes, it's official. Starts in May. And weddings these days cost an average of $35,000 for just one day.
You mean $3,500?
No.
$35,000?
$35,000, yes.
Three zeros?
Three zeros with a 35 in front.
Mm, okay.
That's expensive. That's a lot of cheddar. Okay, for one day. And it's sort of been having an impact on how people decide to tie the knot. I got married last year, and to avoid the cost, we got married at City Hall and then threw a party like 3 months later.
A great party.
Yeah, it was a great party. Saved thousands of dollars. I got pictures. You can put that up there if you want. And I didn't even wear like a real dress. I wore a jumpsuit. Okay.
A great jumpsuit.
Yeah, paid $99 for it. Saved a lot of
money.
Whoa,
I didn't know that.
And by the way, you got married a few years ago. You did it non-traditionally as well.
Yep, we got married at a restaurant in Philadelphia. They didn't even host weddings. We asked them, could we have a wedding there? Because it was more of a diner-style restaurant. And they were like, well, I guess. No one's ever asked before. So we did that. And of course, we didn't have to pay like the wedding glow-up charge, because they weren't in the business of charging people for weddings. They just charged us to rent out the restaurant.
Yeah. And you had like 50 people. I had 50 people, saved thousands of dollars. And so today, oh, look at that. If you're on YouTube, you see my co-host Avi over here with the blue suit.
Yeah, I rocked a blue suit from Banana
gorgeous,
Republic.
By the way, he looks so gorgeous. Your wife looks gorgeous as well.
Always.
Very attractive couple there. But and so we're going to talk about this today. We've got a great lineup for you. We've got the editorial director from The Knot, Esther Lee. We've also got a wedding content creator, because weddings have sort of changed in the age of social media, like what people expect.
Yes.
They want it to look a certain kind of way. So we're going to talk about all the changing expectations, some of the ways people are saving money, from rings to clothing to bridal parties, guests, all the things. And of course, we want to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
We want to hear your experience with wedding costs as both a participant and a guest. And if you're a bride, groom, family members, bridesmaids, groomsmen, anything, we want to hear your stories. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can put your comments and your stories in the chat.
And if you just want to complain about a wedding experience,
yeah,
I would find that amusing. So go
Avi
ahead.
Avi loves that stuff. Yeah. Call in.
Gripe away. 888-477-9499. Email is studio2@whyy.org. But first, a trio of local news stories. And let's start with a story out of the world of Pennsylvania politics. Mm-hmm. Governor Josh Shapiro and his likely November election opponent, Stacey Garrity, are bickering over whether the state should pay for security upgrades to Shapiro's personal residence in Montgomery County. As you likely know, Shapiro and his family were the targets of an arson attack about a year ago. In the wake of that, Shapiro and his family relocated to their personal residence in Montgomery County. State police reportedly asked for security enhancements at their personal home, and now Shapiro is asking the state to cover those charges, which total over $1 million. And that is where Stacey Garrity comes in. She is the state's Republican state treasurer, and she says the law prohibits her from using taxpayer dollars to cover building projects at a private residence. This conflict, by the way, was first reported by Spotlight PA. It's been evolving for a while now. The governor's people say that Garrity is playing political games. Garrity says she's just following the law. And this week, all of Pennsylvania's living governors signed a letter backing Shapiro. So that's where things stand.
Yeah, and of course, all of this comes as we're seeing this apparent rise in political violence,
yes,
right? There was that recent attempt at the White House Correspondents' Dinner over the weekend. And, you know, I think given the popularity of Shapiro, this could have negative political consequences for Garrity. At the same time, you kind of get it, because if the law says the taxpayer money cannot go to non-state own property, I mean, you have to do what the law says. At the same time, you wonder if there could have been some workaround. Could she have sought court intervention, some special carve out from the legislature or something? Because that was an unprecedented attack on the governor's residence. His family was at the home when this happened. And you can understand that because of the trauma, they wanted to return to their private home. So you just wonder how this is going to shake out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all good points. I can't expand much on that, but it's an unusual situation, especially in the fact that it's happening in the lead up to an election, which adds a whole nother layer. Anyway, yeah. Story number two.
Story number two. A local Walmart has decided to roll back self-checkout. Mm. Yeah, the South Philadelphia Walmart on Columbus Boulevard, they've decided to switch back to cashiers. In a world of automation, these big box chains claim that feedback from customers and employees pushed them to go old school to, quote, improve the checkout experience and to allow their cashiers to provide more personalized customer service. Apparently, Avi, people are less loyal to stores when they have to check themselves out.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Since 2024, several retailers have also started switching back to cashiers. Remember, because a few years ago, everybody was going to this self-checkout, but now Five Below, Dollar General, Target, all are sort of, they had leaned into the idea of self-checkout, and now they're limiting self-checkout, and they're going back to the old school way. Five Below, they said that, look, it prevents theft. That's one of the reasons why they're doing that. The Inquirer did this write-up, and they cited an expert from Drexel University who said that customers expect service now in retail environments, and they're less satisfied when they have to ring themselves up and bag their own stuff.
Do you think that's true?
I mean, I don't really like it.
Self-checkout.
I don't like, not, and they even cite a differential. If you're doing a little haul, like you only have three items, you don't mind doing it. But if you're going full shop.
Totally.
I hate it when ShopRite switched to self-checkout and you're got a full cart on Thanksgiving and you're trying to like,
beep, beep, beep,
yeah,
beep,
and then bag your own stuff. Yeah, you it's kind of crazy.
That. I get that. I guess I come at this from the perspective of I'm often shopping in the city,
mm-hmm.
and in a city grocery store especially, there's a lot of people with just a few items because they might not have a car with them, right? So, and like having all those people go through the normal cashier process can be a little like extra when you could just have like 8 little self-checkouts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for small haul, yeah. I think most people agree. But if you're doing larger shopping, people don't like it. And a lot of times in the Walmart, they're doing big shopping.
Have you ever been to that Walmart, by the way?
I haven't gone in a few years. It's a lot.
Crazy.
It's insane. Kids run around like people.
We went there during the Christmas season to get lights, and it was just like, what? I mean, it was Christmas, obviously.
Yeah,
so yeah.
So it was crazy.
Man. Anyways, that's a whole other story.
And they need to have all the cashiers in every lane. They can't, because that one was notorious for having 3 cashiers on hand. It was just crazy.
That place was wild, man. Mm-hmm. Still wild. Anyways, story number 3.
We
have an upset to report.
Uh-oh.
And a new Philly underdog story to add to the canon.
Love an underdog.
After 31 consecutive victories, Jeopardy legend Jamie Ding fell last night to Philadelphian Greg Schiavone.
Wow.
Schiavone beat Ding last night by almost $14,000, snapping the Central Jersey residents' run, which was the 5th longest in show history. This was a Delaware Valley v. Delaware Valley showdown, and Philly came out on top. Schiavone, by the way, is an accomplished chess player, and he told Philly Mag he's only gotten into trivia in recent years. He got all 3 daily doubles in this match. He wagered aggressively. And you gotta go for broke if you're trying to take down the big dog, and that's exactly what he did. So congratulations to you, Philadelphian Greg Schiavone. Tip of the cap to Jamie Ding, by the way. Great run for the Central Jersey resident. And now the question, can Schiavone start a win streak of his own?
So interesting. Shout out to Schiavone. Like you said, I'm Philly over everybody at this point. By the way, your play-by-play, you know, after the fact, amazing, Avi Wolfman.
I would love to do Jeopardy play-by-play.
You
that
did
was
a good job on that one.
That was a career.
But shout out to Jamie Ding, a mild-mannered bureaucrat from Lawrenceville, New Jersey, who's a Princeton grad, by the way. A lot of credit for this dude who held on for a minute. And, you know, we've had past Jeopardy winners from Philly. Ryan Long was one,
yep.
Went a 16-game streak. He got a float in the Thanksgiving Day parade. Okay.
Oh, Philly will love
and
you up.
Philly honored him at City Hall. I wonder what they're going to do for Jamie Dean. I mean, you know, he did a good job. 31
Yeah, but he's
games.
Not really from Philly, though.
I know. Well, not. I wonder if Lawrenceville. Like, if anybody in Jersey going to step up and honor.
I do. I don't watch Jeopardy as much as I used to, but I do believe he was a beloved champion, very humble. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see. You know, we don't really know Greg that well yet. Will he be a beloved multi-time champion? You know?
We'll see. And I mean, that he got to build up past. He won one.
He won one.
You get one in the W column. You got to do more.
Yeah.
But we'll see. He's on a good streak now.
I will say, as a hopeless, really just truly hopeless Sixers fan, I was looking for a sign from the universe that great upsets are possible, because they're struggling right now in their first round series against the Celtics. And Greg Schiavone has given me hope.
All
that
right.
Perhaps,
thank you, Greg.
Perhaps the impossible is possible. So thank you for that as well, Greg. We have to say another sports story as we get out of here.
Yeah.
Just to mention, if you missed this, the Phillies did fire their longtime manager, Rob Thomson, earlier today. I feel bad about this because he seemed like a really nice guy.
Yeah.
But the Phillies are struggling this year, so they did fire Rob Thomson. Farewell, Topper. You have a place in my heart at the very, very least.
Yeah, we'll see if this helps the Phillies do better. So we'll see.
It won't. My prediction. But you will enjoy our program, which is coming up on the other side of this
break.
Weddings. We're talking about weddings. If you have wedding takes about the cost or anything else, really, give us a call. 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. And don't go anywhere. This is Studio 2.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. $35,000. That's a big chunk of savings, or a down payment on a house, or it could make a healthy dent in paying off a student loan. It's also the average cost of a wedding for couples in the United States.
Rising costs over the years for catering, venues, wardrobe, and entertainment have, of course, contributed, but there are also constant trends to keep up with: aesthetically pleasing dress codes for guests, more detailed events leading up to the big day, and the pressure to have a picture-perfect wedding thanks to social media.
Yeah, and guests are feeling the pain, too, from travel for destination weddings and bachelorette parties to rising expectations for how much money to gift the happy couple. Weddings are expensive from pretty much every angle.
We're getting some industry insight today, and we're going to talk about how couples are finding creative ways to cut costs as well. We have two guests with us. The first is Lauren LaDouceur, who is a wedding content creator at Weddings with Lore. Lore, welcome to Studio 2.
Hello. Thank you guys so much for having me today.
Hello. Yes, and Esther Lee is the editorial director of The Knot, a full-service platform that connects brides and grooms with vendors and offers lots of planning, tools, and resources. Esther Lee, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. What an intro.
Yes. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. We want you to tell us about your experience with wedding costs as both a participant and a guest. And we want to hear from brides, grooms, family members, bridesmaids, groomsmen, all the people. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you could drop your comments and your stories in the chat.
Let me read this comment from Karen to start us off. Karen says, "My wedding was in 1998. We spent over $30,000 then. We held it on a Sunday to save money on the venue for the reception. It was a lot of planning, stress, and money. Pretty event, and we have been married almost 28 years, but it was one expensive party." So building off of Karen's comment, Esther Lee, we've been talking about the price of weddings. Is it unusual, though? Has it gone up faster than the pace of inflation, or are we just sort of dealing with the same sticker shock here that we're dealing with in many other sectors of the economy?
So there's a few things I want to say. First, Karen, congratulations. Happy anniversary to you. Fun fact, guess what? Today we launched The Knot magazine. It's the 30th anniversary of The Knot, by the way, this year.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I know I have this beautiful cover in front of me right now. Venus Williams is our cover star. Something I want to say on that note is that weddings prove to be resilient. So economically correct, there are some macroeconomic trends that we do see come down to the cost of florals or the cost of catering, for example. However, all this to say, couples are still saying that this is a significant investment and one that is worthy for their wedding days. In fact, 95% are confident about moving forward with their weddings, according to our most recent poll survey.
Wow, so people are willing to spend the money. I wonder what has changed about weddings in the past 15, 20 years. I mean, because now we have the social media matters, the internet. People want to see photos right away and have the whole experience. What have you seen shift?
On our ends, well, we have seen the increase of personalization. So first there was a term personalization, and now there is hyper personalization, which we're seeing everywhere. This comes down to even the aesthetic dress codes that we see on social media. Of course, they are fueled by that experience. Couples are being extra thoughtful about the storytelling and the branding around their wedding days. And it really does fall in line with a lot of the trends that come in too. Like, what are those special moments or touches that really feel like it's them versus the mass ecosphere of weddings? And so there's an extra layer of thoughtfulness when it comes into the planning and the details for the wedding day.
April on YouTube says, "My wedding was almost 5 years ago. It cost approximately $50,000. We planned it in 12 months, had 66 guests attend. It was a destination wedding in MV. I'm guessing that means Martha's Vineyard." But April says, "We do it all over again." So, Laura, I want to hear from you first about your job, wedding content creator, because I think it probably connects to this trend toward personalization and storytelling that Esther was laying out. But first, I think you have to describe to people what it is that you do, because people that got married 20 or 30 years ago, they weren't even probably thinking about hiring a wedding content creator. So first, could you describe your job for us?
I agree with Esther's sentiments of what an intro. I need you guys to follow me around everywhere and just
So
start
I have to
introing.
say, that was written by our producer, Paige Marie Besser. Producer Paige. So if we're going
Yes.
to compliment it twice, we cannot take credit for that.
We got
Thank
to
you,
give it to
Producer
Paige.
Paige. But go ahead, Laura.
But I am a wedding content creator. So at its core, essentially what that means is I am going around on a wedding day and I'm filming it all on an iPhone. And I'm going around filming it all, taking a bunch of photos, taking a bunch of videos, and turning all of that into like social ready content. Whether you post it on social or not post it on social is totally up to you. But what I mean by social ready content is mean is that it is edited vertically instead of kind of standard, like edited horizontally. And I'm turning all of that around within 24 hours after your wedding. So
Wow.
you're waking up next day, couple goes to sleep, hopefully feeling loved, maybe a little drunk, like they're falling asleep, having so much fun. They wake up and then they will have all of these photos and videos and edited recaps from their wedding day the next day.
So what makes a good moment, Laura? Like if you're at the wedding, like what are you looking for to really give that feeling for the next day and all the social posts?
Totally. I mean, I think to echo Esther's sentiment, I mean, details and personalization are everywhere. I've only been doing weddings for the past 5 years. I mean, this is my full-time job. I've done it for the past 5 years, and even in the 5 years that since I have started and like been a part of the wedding industry, we're seeing details take over. I mean, I think we people when I first started doing weddings, they were doing like a signature drink or like maybe they bring their dogs to the ceremony. And now it is into branding it for a full weekend, getting your guests really involved in every single aspect. And so when it comes down to content that I'm taking and I'm looking at, I want to find where are those moments, where are those special details. For me personally, I love a wedding speech, and that's a little controversial these days, but like
Oh, that's
I love
controversial.
seeing in weddings currently, yes, a little controversial in the sense that people are saying that like speeches are a little long. They can maybe disrupt the flow of a wedding day. Like, sometimes you're like, all I want to do is just like eat my salad, but someone's been talking for 20 minutes,
Yeah,
like
totally.
in that area. But I love anything that's like speeches, bows, toast, any of those moments that you can't replicate. I think a lot of people know that you'll never have the same group of people all together as you do on your wedding day. And so doing anything that we can do to kind of capture that is really important to me.
We're asking you, our listeners this hour, to tell us about your experience with wedding costs as both participant and guest. We want to hear from brides, grooms, family members, bridesmaids, etc. Our number is 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org, YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. Here's a comment from Lou who says, 40 years ago, we got married on a Stafford loan and hoped the gifts would cover the rest of the $1,200 catering bill. You can't do that these days. Laura, I just wanted to follow up real quick with you. You talked about the services that you offer, and you know, one of the benefits for people is that you have something to post the next day about your wedding that's personal to you. That looks really, really good. But why do people want that? Like, why do they want that quick turnaround? And why do they want to, you know, broadcast on social media what their wedding experience was like?
I think this actually goes back to kind of the what you were talking about at the beginning of the segment, in the sense that, like, you know, someone was like, hey, 30 years ago, it cost me $35,000 or it cost me $30,000. And, you know, that's still the cost today, if not more. And I think one of the things that sometimes gets lost in translation is that publications like The Knot have been around, as we're seeing right now, for 30 years. But that used to be how you consumed weddings. You know, the way you consumed weddings, where you went to the grocery store, you went to the newspaper stand, and you grabbed a magazine and you sat down and you flipped through it. And you probably weren't buying a wedding magazine unless you were in that stage of your life. Versus now, we're inundated with weddings. You know, because of social media, people who I haven't talked to in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, we might be Facebook friends with them, you know, or we might be Instagram friends with them. And we're seeing their weddings and we're seeing the weddings of their friends. And so now I think weddings have become something that, because we are inundated with it, I think as humans, like, we are just creatures who want to belong and want to be a part of, like, whatever is socially going on in the zeitgeist. And so, like, people are wanting to be a part of that conversation as well. It's why they want to post their wedding photos. Also, like, you probably just spent like a year and more money than you ever thought on a wedding. Like, if it's me, I want to show off. I want to say, hey, I did this and I live to tell the tale.
Yeah. Look at those place settings that we spent all that money and time designing.
Exactly.
By the way, I want to bring a caller in. We have Kathy from Boyerstown on the line. Kathy, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, yes, I really wanted to weigh in on this because my daughter is getting married in 4 days.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And we had 4 months to get ready. It was quite an education. And we are coming in around $8,000, which I feel fantastic about after hearing this program. But we found a venue that would allow us to just do the banquet program instead of the wedding package, which saved us hundreds. We're doing a lot ourselves. My husband went out in our yard and cut down wood rounds, you know, for the tables, and we're doing all the decor. I'm doing the flowers. There's some amazing online DIY wedding flower sites where you can order your flowers, get tutorials.
Wow.
I'm doing all that. Ask me if it was a good idea next week.
All right. Well, Kathy from Boyerstown.
Call us back next week, Kathy.
And by the way, if you want to share your wedding story, you can call 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Tell us about your experience with wedding costs, both as a participant and guest. We'd love to hear from more mothers and fathers of the bride, grooms, family members, bridesmaids, and the bride and groom. And so, Esther, I want to bring you back into the conversation because we heard about this. A lot of people are trying to save money. I don't know if you heard the intro to the show, but both Avi and I did very non-traditional versions of a wedding so that we could save a ton of money, and yet both experiences, great experiences. What are some of the trends you're seeing where people are trying to cut down on that $35,000 number? Like, you heard this mom, they're coming in at 8K, which is great.
Yeah. There's one thing I want to note on that. So $35,000 is the national average, right?
Yes.
So it's an average that is a compilation across this tapestry of the 50 states across America. New York City is significantly much more expensive compared to other regional locations. So think about Wyoming, think about Montana, like, some of those costs will vary in addition to the number of events that you do have throughout the wedding weekend. That being said, one thing I do want to recommend to all couples is we have something that's really helpful at The Knot called The Knot Budget Advisor, and you're able to input all of the details around your specific budget for the wedding day, as well as allocation of like what is most important to you. And it helps you figure out your priorities according to your budget. And I think the reason why this is so valuable is because we find that couples do often go over their budgets because they get so excited about the details and the personalization. One thing I always say to every couple who comes to me for advice, though, is you have to sit down not only with your budget in mind, but like talk about the need to haves versus the nice to haves. That's what we call them at The Knot.
Yeah.
Like, what is most important to you? Is it the catering? Is it a live band? Because live bands will cost additional. And really have those honest conversations and be forthright about it, which is going to help you really narrow down like what is most priority for you as you figure out your budget.
And quick follow up for you, Esther. I mean, what are the big, because I would think that the things that cost the most would be like the catering and venue. Is that correct? Like, what are the big money sucks when you're trying to plan a wedding? I think that's a bad phrase, but that's what I'm talking about.
Cherished items.
Yes. The things most that cost the most.
Yes. Well, you're going to need a wedding location, right? A site to have all of your guests host them. And of course, weddings often are correlated with food as well. So the reason why, let me explain and educate, take a moment to educate really quickly. Venue is often like about half of the total cost of a wedding. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you're hosting it at a location. Some venues offer F&B on site. So there is package tiers that are offered by the team on site. Other venues might be a raw space, in which case you have to bring everything in. So you might have to hire the caterer separately, or you might have a very specific type of caterer. I think about Indian weddings often where they might bring in an outside caterer to come in. Overall, those are two of the most important because it's part of the guest experience. And by the way, couples overwhelmingly say when they're planning a wedding, the guest experience is number one for them to keep in mind. Because it's hospitality, if you think about it at the end of the day.
And you want people to leave having had a good time.
Absolutely. Let me bring in another caller. This is Janet from Egg Harbor on the line. Hey, Janet, you're on Studio 2. Would love to hear your wedding perspective.
Well, thanks. My husband and I married in 1995, so a long time ago, no social media. But our friends threw us a wonderful potluck dinner at someone's house. We had a ball. We took our families. We went to Sedona, Arizona. And I bought my wedding dress at Strawbridge and Clother for $80. And I don't regret any of this.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And you can't do that anymore because Strawbridge is close. That's a great story from Janet.
30 years. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Janet. I want to read this comment from Aaliyah. This is an interesting one. Okay. Mm-hmm. Aaliyah says, I will never be a bridesmaid again. It was horrible spending all that money for a dress. I'm convinced was selected to be intentionally expensive for the sake of being expensive. All the expectation. Nah. They have been married for at least 15 years and we haven't spoken since.
Wow.
I think one of the thorniest issues, Esther, when it comes to weddings is how much you can ask of the guests and the wedding party. Because all these folks are going to be spending some amount of money getting to your wedding and participating in your wedding. And you want them there, but you don't want to burden them. How do you think about approaching that, Esther?
Okay, I love that you're asking me this because we do not shy away from tough topics. And the same thing goes for the wedding. Aaliyah, I'm sorry that happened with your relationship as well. What we find is that weddings are almost this compressed period where you realize like relationally and communication-wise what needs to be done. So when it comes to friendships, oftentimes it's almost like this pressure cooker situation where if the right communication doesn't occur or if like you're not aligning on expectations up front and having those honest discussions, oftentimes this is what happens because it is a significant investment, not only for the couple, but also for those who are members of their community. And so all this to say, what we do encourage couples to do is to sit down with their wedding parties too, and to have like a very upfront discussion about like cost expectations, bachelorette party, like bachelor party, where is the locale? How many days is it? And just really be clear about aligning on those. It's almost like, I think about it as project management in a workspace almost. And if you treat it like that, and honestly, treat it from a perspective of gratitude as well, like gratitude on both ends. Like, thank you for having me in your wedding. Thank you for just being a member of my party and championing this relationship as well. That's where we really find delight comes from it too. People want to celebrate you.
Yeah, they really thank you do. Goes a long way.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
And let's bring in another caller. We have Josh from Ashton on the line. Josh, you're on Studio 2. What's your wedding story?
Hey, yeah. So about 10 years ago, my family and friends were getting together, and we were cheap, poor, you know, college kids, and we didn't really have much to help out. So we just kind of mixed families, and it was a Mexican culture and a German culture, and we potlucked the entire thing. And it was, like, really quick and really fun, and we basically did it for free besides, you know, standard material costs for food and stuff, but we didn't pay out. It was just us, you know.
What was the best dish at the potluck, Josh? Be honest.
Oh yeah, of course. There's German cabbage.
All right. Josh from Ashton. Love that. By the way, you can share your stories by calling 888-477.
The German cabbage was number one.
499. I know.
I mean, I like German cabbage, but I wasn't
expecting
that.
His mom might have made it. You never know. You have to, or you know, or the new wife. You never know. By the way, and the email is studio2@whyy.org. Tell us your experience about wedding costs as both participant and guest. And Laura, bringing back in the conversation, what have sort of you seen? I mean, are the trends to have, you know, bridesmaids and groomsmen kind of go their own way, wear whatever they want? Or have you seen more weddings now with strict dress codes or people becoming more relaxed? What are some of the trends you're seeing?
Really great question. I talk a lot about this on my social media, so I'm like very chronically online. I spend too much time. My screen time is atrocious. And so I actually spend a lot of time on my personal social media talking about this. It's what I have coined the politics of bridesmaids, meaning that like when you are becoming in someone's wedding party, you first off, bridal parties make us publicly rank our friends, like out loud and in public. And even if it's not like, facts. When you're like, no, that's like not true. It is true. Like that is how other people see it. So yeah. Like, I think that's number one. And number two, it also requires you to put a cost association on your friendship. You know, I think we all kind of have a range of, you know, our best friends from childhood versus our college friends versus our work friends. And like my best friend from childhood, she could call me right now and be like, I need you to be in Atlanta because like something happened. Great. I'm on the first flight. I don't care about the cost. Like, I'm doing whatever I can. I'm changing my life to be there. A work friend, if they're like, hey, I need you to show up right now, you know, like you're kind of like, okay, girl, like give me 4 or 5 days to figure it out. Like, let me move some things around. I'm probably complaining a little bit to my husband. Like, oh my God, she always needs me. You know, like there's just a different range of friends. And I think on the wedding day, typically because a lot of people do have bridal parties, you're bringing in all of those groups of people, all who are coming to the table with a different relationship to the couple and also like a different relationship and how much they financially value that. And that is weird and that is sticky and that feels awkward to be like, I value your friendship $400 versus I value your friendship $1,000, you know? Mm-hmm.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
So I think that's a big thing. I say trends in weddings kind of go back and forth. So back in 2022, we started seeing the rise of no bridal parties, where people were very much like not wanting that. They were like, it's too much hassle. It's too much effort. I don't want to deal with all of that. I would say now that we're seeing bridal parties kind of come back into fashion and people are more excited about them. Because as with everything, like people were like, oh, I don't want bridesmaids, but they were like, but I still want the bachelorette and I still want the bridal shower and I still want people to get ready with me, but I just won't call them bridesmaids. And then I feel like people were like, well, if I'm doing all of that, I want the title of bridesmaid, you know?
Right.
So I think we see things constantly kind of in flux coming in and coming out. Another example of this is wedding cakes. Like again, back in 2021, 2022, it was the era of the silent cake cutting, meaning that like, you didn't announce it. You might take your cake over to the side just with your photographer, videographer, content creator and like cut the cake. It wasn't a big deal versus now I think we're very much back into like the multi-tier cake. It's more of an experience.
And let's share the cake.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's share the cake. Let's do a song for the cake cutting. Let's like make it a much bigger moment. So with, I think with anything in weddings,
it's a pendulum.
Come in,
it's a pendulum swing. Yeah. We have to get to a break here. On the other side of this break, we're going to talk to a wedding DJ who's also about to get married himself.
What?
That's an interesting perspective.
We're bringing in the guys. I love it.
And let me read this comment quick from Maureen, who says, I'm a boomer, one of 10. My parents gave us $3,000 each for our weddings. We rented an inexpensive inn up in the Poconos, and this avoided the horde of relatives coming from all over the country because no one can get to the Poconos.
Yeah.
People still talk about how beautiful and sweet it was. And that's a sweet comment from Maureen. You're listening to Studio 2. If you have a comment, give us a call. 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
I'm getting a lot of like sticker shock at the moment. I know how expensive weddings are, but I didn't realize, like, I think just to see the numbers is a different different experience.
The wedding isn't the marriage. The wedding is a party. That's all I kept telling myself. So it's just a party. It's just a party. It's just a party. So that kept me going.
Back when I started, parents were still helping out. Now that's not the case. Couples were doing it on their own. So they don't have as much money, or they'd rather spend it on a honeymoon, or they'd rather spend it to buy a house. It's a whole different business than it used to be.
Yeah, welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Those were the voices of two brides in our region, Iduku and Dietra. We also heard from Wendy Hartigan, who has been a Philly area wedding planner for over 20 years. This hour, we've been talking about why the cost of weddings is so high, looking at some industry trends, and hearing how couples are cutting costs.
Yes, and our guests are Esther Lee. She's the editorial director at The Knot, and Lauren LaDucer, a wedding content creator. And tell us about your experience with wedding costs. We're talking to you, our listeners, as both participant and guest. We'd love to hear from brides, grooms, wedding party members, parents, all the things. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And you can drop your comments in the chat if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook.
Jason writes us and says, for my wife and I, it was important to include as many people as we could to make it affordable. We saved on food by making a potluck. Then by requesting no gifts, we asked that attendees either bring food or beverage. So we had no food or beverage costs. Everybody ate and drank the night away. And in the end, there were 250 people. But the event only costs $6,000, including a local band of friends. Now, speaking of music, let's talk to a groom who's not just your average groom. He happens to also be a wedding DJ. Ryan Sullivan, a.k.a. DJ Sully, is joining us now. He's based in Marlton, New Jersey, and has DJed lots of other people's weddings. Now he's planning his own. Ryan Sullivan, a.k.a. DJ Sully, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you guys.
Yeah, so Ryan, I mean, you've been in the wedding game as a DJ for a while, and you're also getting married. What are some of the things that you think give you an advantage because you work in this wedding space and the advantage in planning your own wedding?
Yeah, so I think, you know, of course I've been to so many different venues right across the region. So I know people personally at these venues. That is, you know, one advantage that I have in terms of the vendor side, reaching out, hoping, you know, I can use those connections. But I think also on the planning side, I understand how a wedding works front to back because I've been to so many of them. And that's what I'm also, you know, always telling my friends about and family if they're getting married, is really explaining what a wedding DJ is like. But those are just two aspects, whether it's the vendors or, you know, the intimate planning process that you got to go through.
This is such a silly question, but I'm so curious, DJ Sully. What's the most requested song these days?
That is tough. We did have last year, kind of in the Pink Pony Club era, there was a lot of that.
Chapel Roan, yeah.
I'm finding a lot of Chapel Roan. There are trends, don't get me wrong, but since at least the way that I DJ a wedding, it's very custom to the bride and groom and their crowd. So while there are trends, and I will take a look at that, I really feel like I'm starting from scratch with every single couple, and that's, you know, what I really love to do is make it custom to them.
Yeah, and is that how it works with because I want to know, like, what's the vibe? Do people tell you the vibe that they want? Do they give you their favorite songs? Like, how does it work to really just sort of set the music and make sure that it has the right tone for whatever wedding or wedding party you're working for?
Yeah, great question. So this is where I start with everybody. First, I explain the difference between a DJ and a wedding DJ. So a DJ is somebody who can do either they specialize and they just do clubs, or they just do EDM, right? Or maybe they just do, you know, parties. And then you have a wedding DJ. A wedding DJ is 30% DJing, 70% everything else, right? Mm. So a great wedding DJ is there to communicate with the other vendors, right? When is cake happening? Is the cake ready? Are the bride and groom ready? Is the photographer ready? Is the videographer ready? Are the lights on? Should they be off? All these really small details, everything from the initial planning process, the calls, talking through that, music selection, all the way to the day of and every single event detail. That's what a wedding DJ does. And that's, at least I can speak for myself, that's what I do. And when it comes to the music, I typically have couples give me 10, 20, 30 songs, the must-haves. This is really what I want to be played. And then the do not play, which is really important, because you don't want to have a DJ play a song that you don't want, right? So I start there, and then I just ask them, who's going to be at this wedding? How many people? Are they in their 20s and 30s? Are there some older folks there as well? So we want to make sure we cater to them. So I keep it really custom. I'm going to build a playlist based on their interest, their vibe, and their crowd. And then also I'm DJing live as well to make sure that that dance floor never stops.
Real quick, DJ Sully, one trend that we've covered on this show recently is how people are drinking less. Does that mean people want to dance less at weddings as well? Is there like a different vibe these days, or are people still cutting up?
I would say if it's a dry wedding, you don't have as much, you know, liquid confidence happening, right? And that kind of enthusiasm that where it makes it easier to dance. But I don't think it's a requirement. I think we're really shifting, you know, towards that culture and, you know, or maybe meeting in the middle where it's just beer and wine. I'm seeing that a lot too.
Yeah.
So, and listen, like if the venue allows, you know, some people do BYOB too. So I'm just seeing it custom for each wedding. I don't think they're going to dance less. I mean, if I'm involved.
That's right. That's DJ Sully, DJ Ryan Sully. Sullivan. Thank you so much for your time today, sir, on Studio 2.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. Really appreciate you.
And Joey on YouTube says, attending weddings is a big ding on my bank account. Destination wedding, ? Destined to not see me, says Joey on YouTube.
Dang, Joey.
No, Joey's like,
I will say this,
real.
Joey, someone else commented and said that their kid is, I think, getting married in Ireland, 25 people. Wow. I would go to that destination wedding.
And so that's what
my question
is. Might
depend on the destination for me.
It's like planning a vacation. So Esther, I want to get your thoughts on that. I mean, people planning destination weddings, you got to convince a critical mass of people to spend a lot of money to come to see you get married. How does that work? And, you know, and what are you seeing as far as trends and people just trying to keep costs affordable? Or does that really matter if they want to take part?
It's interesting. So what we find with destination weddings is that couples often lately want to create a curated experience. I say this experience first for an entire weekend for their guests. That starts with often a welcome party so that people who are attending this wedding can get to know each other throughout the weekend, followed by the actual ceremony the next day. It could round out with a sunset sail or cruise or a next day brunch. It's called like the farewell brunch the following day, but really, it really depends on the couple, the location that they've chosen, why it's meaningful and important to them. And then it's really about the hospitality experience that you're giving them throughout the entire weekend. One note on destination weddings that I do want to say is that often what we do see with couples who might ask their friends to travel all the way to, I don't know, Mallorca or to Marrakesh, is to often refrain from gifts and to think about the travel itself as sort of the gift to the couple. So I have seen it that way personally as an attendee of these types of weddings. And just really being thoughtful about like what people are sacrificing, the time, the expenses to actually be there. And of course, Joey, to be honest with you, think about it as a vacation perhaps.
Yeah,
and that might be the way.
Yeah.
But look, if I'm going to Mallorca or Marrakesh, my presence is the present.
Yes.
Let's put it like that. Okay. Emily from Allentown is on the line. Hey, Emily, you're on Studio 2. What's your wedding insight or experience you'd like to share with us?
Hi. So we had a DIY wedding for 175 people. It cost us less than $7,500.
We purchased ingredients online, hired two culinary students from the local college to cook, and we made all of our own homemade hard cider and apple, or I'm sorry, Perry, which is pear hard cider.
Wow!
And all of what we requested for our honeymoon for gifts was for us to go to Patagonia in Chile to go ultralight backpacking.
I love it. I love it. I wish I was there backpacking with you. Thank you,
Save
Emily,
that money. Yeah.
From Allentown. Okay,
absolutely.
I got to read this comment from Frank, because this is an eternal question, okay? Frank says, what is up with the weird sex stuff associated with bachelor and bachelorette parties? Most awkward times I've ever had were a couple of times I had to go to strip clubs and be part of the process and had to watch dudes who were supposed to be in love going nuts with lap dances. Same night, the future wife was at a party where a male stripper was hired. We haven't really talked about bachelor, bachelorette parties, but is that still the trend, Esther? That idea of the sort of maybe Vegas, Atlantic City, bachelor, bachelorette parties, that's still in? Or have people like shifted focus when it comes to bachelor, bachelorette?
Okay, I want to say one note on this. That might have been prevalent in the 90s, 2000s. We all saw The Wolf of Wall Street. We know what that culture was like. After COVID, though, we're seeing wellness. We're seeing, again, the whole point of like personalization. It's a little bit more wholesome. Over the weekend, I was in the DR, and I saw so many bachelor parties of just golf buddies. They were all golfing together, and their clubs were like together on the plane. And I just think it's interesting to see a turn more towards personal taste and interests versus like what the pressure should be like of what a bachelor should be like, a bachelor party should be like, versus like, what do I honestly want to do with my best friends over the course of a week or a weekend? And for some people, it's golf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gen Z, man, I tell you, they were like, none of that. It's
debauchery.
It switched it up.
It's done.
I want to bring you back into the conversation, Laura, and talk about LGBTQ weddings, right? What have you seen as far as trends? Because there's so much creativity that could be there. And I mean, it's basically you can kind of choose how you want to have your wedding. Are there anything that stood out to you?
I shoot primarily, it's so funny because everything you guys are talking about are like my market. So like I actually specialize in destination weddings. So I do like multi-day, like 3 to 4, 5 day events. I would say a lot of my queer weddings as of recently have been destination weddings. Oh. So like they are taking like a whole bunch of their friends to an all-inclusive, whether it's in Mexico or DR or Costa Rica, something along those lines. And so I think a lot of the sentiment that I see in a lot of queer weddings is chosen family and choosing the people who are like going to be there, you know, on the day for them, but also like in their marriage and in their life and in the families that they want to build. And so I see a lot of the events that they're doing there, like represented in that. So things like, you know, they might have people come for 4 days and it might actually start with like a bachelor or bachelorette or joint bachelor party, you know, as like the first night of the event, of the events while on site. And then from there go to like a welcome party that leans into one person's taste and then go into the wedding. That's kind of like a combination of everything. And then, you know, the last day will be like a beach club or a boat day or something along those lines that just puts their personalities at the forefront.
I like that. I love it. An anonymous YouTuber says, I got married at Drexel Brook in Delco back in 2008, 25K. Marriage didn't last, but I bought a house in Drexel Hill and drive past Drexel Brook almost every day. The ironies of life. I want to read this comment from Judith, who says, my granddaughter is getting married this summer in her hometown of Charlottesville, Virginia. For her entire life, I have bought every special occasion dress for each graduation and prom, and now I am thrilled to be able to pay $2,400 for her wedding dress. It's an honor. So sometimes there's an personal attachment to the money that you're spending, and it's not just like the way we've been framing it sometimes, of just like money down the drain, right? People, this matters to people. I am curious about dress and attire, Laura, like what trends you're seeing there in terms of wedding dresses, in terms of tuxes or whatever. Like, have we moved into a different aesthetic era? Do dresses and suits look significantly different now than the tradition? Or like, how would you describe how the aesthetic of the attire is shifting as you see it?
The number one comment or DM or anything I deal with on social media is people asking me if their dress or tux is appropriate for a black tie wedding. So I would say that that is something that a lot of people are asking for black tie weddings, or like creative black tie, or all of these types of things. I genuinely do not think that people want black tie weddings, because I do think like with a black tie wedding, there is an expectation of like a black tie experience. And Esther, I think, can really speak to this. The Knot has, I've even worked with The Knot to do articles on black tie. Like, you know, a black tie experience is something that I read an article that it was like, typically a black tie event has, it's like around $1,000 per head is what you should budget for an really truly black tie experience, because that is valet upon arrival, drink when you walk in. It's a plated three-course dinner. It's multiple forms of entertainment. It's, you know, it's like the highest of high levels. Like that is like what like royalty have balls that are black tie, you know? Right. It's not really like, you know, your average everyday wedding is black tie, but I think a lot of people, because they are spending so much time and energy and money, they want a dress code that feels like respectful for the type of event they have. And I think everyone kind of comes to the table with something different. So I think most people just really want a formal event, you know, where they have, people are dressed nice, they're in suits or maybe like, you know, tie.
And I want to get, because we only have a minute left, so I want to give Esther the final word on that. Could you add to what Laura had to say? I mean, when you put things on guests, I mean, right, the more you ask your guests to do, the higher the expectations are. Can you just give a word of advice to folks as they enter this wedding season and are in the midst of planning?
Yes, to Laura's point, like the experience has to match. And at the end of the day, you are hosting an experience for your loved ones. And so thinking about the hospitality behind it, the guest experience, every single touch point will really go a long way when it comes to your celebration and how people will remember it. At the end of the day, it's your wedding. It's your love story at the forefront. And guess what? Your favorite people get to all be in one room to celebrate you. How special is that? So remember that throughout the wedding planning process.
True. Yeah. Great closing words from Esther Lee, editorial director at The Knot. Esther, really appreciate your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you so much. I had the best time with both of you.
And equal thanks to Laura LaDouceur, who is a wedding content creator. Her handle is at Weddings with Laura. Laura, really appreciated having you on the show.
Thank you all so much.
And let's shout out Gary from Mount Airy, who says, when we got married, we had everything we needed materially. So we sent all the invites, a list of our 20 favorite causes, and told people just bring a check and write it to one of your favorite causes. And it ended up, his wedding was written up in the LA Times because of that. So that's a pretty cool story to love end that. On from Gary in Mount Airy.
Love the headline, A Wedding for Just Cause. I love that. Yes, and of course, got to shout out our producers, Debbie Builder, Hazel May Bryan, and Paige Murray Bessler for their hard work today. Charlie Kyer engineered today's show. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer, and our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you tomorrow.